Clubhouse.
Hey everybody, this is Aisha from Pod Clubhouse. Welcome to Love It or Leave It, where we have a roundtable discussion to work out the good, the bad, the ugly on the latest on TV shows and movies. I'll help you to decide whether you should love it or leave it. So today we are discussing Amazon Prime's newest anthology series, Them. And helping me discuss is my former podcast co-host of Lovecraft, Sean. Hey, Sean.
Hey.
So full disclosure, everybody, Sean is not only my Pod Clubhouse co-host, he's also my husband. And this is our first podcast together, so I'm excited.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yep.
So we're here to talk about Them on Amazon Prime. 10 episodes created by Little Marvin and executive produced by Lena Waithe. What's our basic plot for this show?
So it is an anthology series, which I believe is kind of like the American Horror Story series, where that every season will have a different cast or partially different cast and a different setting, maybe even a different time setting, if you will, as well as location setting. That's assumed. But this is season one, and this one takes place in Southern California, specifically Compton, California, in 1953, and centers around a black family that has moved to Southern California from North Carolina. Very common in this time period, and we can go into more detail later, but very common as part of the second great migration for a lot of African Americans to move out of the South and either to the North or especially to the West Coast, where there was a lot of aerospace and engineering jobs available for them in the late 40s through the 50s into the 60s. And so this family is part of that, and they are moving out to Compton, which most people nowadays associate with hip-hop culture on the West Coast. But actually, back in the 50s, Compton was very much an all-white city. So it's them moving in as the first black family on the street and the horrors that then ensue, both from their white neighbors as well as from some supernatural sources.
Okay, so I know this is that's a mouthful, right?
It is a lot.
Whew. I think so. For anybody who's never listened to a Love It or Leave It, or maybe you listen to them all the time on Pod Clubhouse, and we thank you for that. Those who have not, we will not disclose any spoilers. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, I might want to watch this show or this series, but I don't want to keep listening to them because I don't want to spoil it for myself, we will let you know before we get into any spoilers or anything that can really just, you know, ruin the show for you, because we don't want to do that. We want to keep it. For I am queen, no spoilers. We will tell you. I hate it. Like, even if you make like a certain breath during a scene, I'll be like, you spoiled it. I already knew what was coming. I knew it, you know, and he'll like
a look,
freak out. Yeah.
Something.
So believe me, I got your back. I will not ruin this. We won't ruin it for you. And we will tell you at that point in the podcast where you should just like shut it off if you've never seen the series. So that being said, we've got the background, the basic plot of the show. Funny thing is, or not funny, but the interesting thing is this show is all done over the course of 10 days.
Just 10 days, a week
each
and a half.
Each episode is day one, day two, day three.
Well, some episodes are split over two episodes. True. Other episodes take place across 3 days. But either way.
Okay, true. But the entire first season is done over the course of 10 days, right?
Right. Yep.
Very cool. Once I saw that, because it's the first thing you see when it comes up on the show, I was like, okay, well, we're going to do this all in 10 days. This is going to be quite a ride. And boy, was it.
Indeed.
Okay, well, let's go into the characters casting. All right. These are things that anybody can pull up on the show. You can Wikipedia it. You can IMDb it. The casting was immaculate. It was perfect.
Phenomenal.
Great word. Phenomenal.
Yeah. I'd be surprised if these folks didn't get nominated for a few awards when all's said and done.
Even the two children in the show, they were phenomenal. I mean, just great actresses for young people. I was just really, really just impressed with the level of acting and the casting for this. Anybody that stood out for you as much on the cast, Sean?
Yeah, I think the lady who played Lucky, and I want to
Deborah Ayerinde.
Ayerinde, yeah. I was like, I don't want to mess the last name up. She was incredible.
Right?
Her facial expressions alone, I think she carried that show. I mean, Lucky was the main protagonist of the show. Everything revolved around her.
Right.
And I don't think I'm spoiling anything by saying that every show is going to have a main protagonist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's her, and we can get into later on why that is. But you need an actress who would be able to take on that weight of the show. And she was more than up to the task. She was absolutely incredible. I mean, without saying a word, just her facial expressions alone were moving and drove entire scenes. So she, to me, she was the highlight of this show.
You know, so many shows and series that we see or protagonists are usually male. We're seeing more and more and more as these years are going by with the protagonists of these major shows and series coming out where we have female leads, and not only female leads, but female leads of color, which I am all for it.
Oh, agreed. So, absolutely.
Strong female leads.
Right. Exactly what I was just going to say. You know, to your point, you know, a lot of these shows kind of give you the impression that it's going to be the husband, the father, the man.
The man, the male.
The man. Yeah. And certainly, I believe his name is Ashley Thomas, who played Henry Emery. He was definitely up to the task of playing that role. He did a phenomenal job. Again, he brought so much gravitas to the role. But very quickly, as you get into this, you see that Lucky, the wife, the mother, she is the central focus of this show for multiple reasons. But once you see that and you see that she is the foundation for this, I love seeing that because to your point, we don't see enough of that. We are starting to. We are starting to, definitely. And we are seeing more of that diversity in television and film that I think people have been craving for a very long time. We don't see enough of it, and it's good to really see that represented, not only in this show, but to see that trend emerging as well.
Absolutely. I fully agree. So for people who have only heard bits and pieces about this show, because I keep hearing over and over again, is it like Us, that movie Us? People ask me that. They say, is it horror? Is it like the Jordan Peele movie that's escaping me? Get Out.
Get Out.
My gosh.
That was it. I know. We're horrible.
I'm embarrassed for
I know. That is horrible considering I love that movie.
So people ask me, is it like Get Out? Is it? And I'm like, why you got to ask? Is it like Get Out? Is it because it's a black movie? Like a black series? No. I mean, not necessarily. I think it's because it's got this
It has a horrific and supernatural.
You're right.
It does
feeling
have that.
When you first see the trailer, okay?
Right.
Let's just talk about trailers or anything you've seen before you even start watching the series. And that's why people are always asking me, like, what is it? So how would you describe this show besides what we've already said on the basic plot? Like, would you call it horror? Would you call it?
So I think you know, there is a subgenre that Jordan Peele has created of black horror films, Get Out. Us are two that come to mind immediately. I mean, I see that this clearly is influenced by that and borrows from it, but I don't necessarily think it belongs solely in that subgenre. I think that would be limiting to it. Because it's an anthology series and we're not sure where the creators are going to take it going forward. But primarily, my assumption is there'll be a focus around the African-American historical experience.
I hope so.
And that's my assumption, obviously. But I'd say it actually, what I saw a lot of parallels to, and you're going to laugh, but I'm a child of the 80s. What I saw was there was that African-American horror aspect of it. And of course, that racial history aspect of that burgeoning part of the civil rights era in the 50s. But also a big part of it was it was a lot to me like Poltergeist.
Oh, yes.
The 1982 movie about the family that was haunted.
I'm not going to lie. I felt that way, too.
Okay, so a quick...
And we did not watch... Yeah, we did not watch this together.
No, we didn't. And so a quick synopsis. I mean, I think most everybody... A Poltergeist. Oh. I think everybody knows. But just in case, hey, the movie's almost 40 years old, so just...
Oh,
just
there might be people out there.
Just a quick synopsis. Poltergeist came out in 1982. It was a story of a family that was being haunted by a series of ghosts because their brand new Southern California tract home had been built
right
on top of where a religious cult had gone to their had committed suicide and died. There was a cave in which they did it that was underneath the house. And when they built the house and specifically built the swimming pool in the backyard, it basically triggered all the ghosts. And so the whole movie is about this family being haunted, and they were fixated on the little girl, the daughter of the family, the youngest member of the family. She was like 7 years old, and they were fixated on her. And of course, it spawned a couple of sequels. The second one was not bad. The third one was horrible, but anyways, this show also very much
parallels.
There was a lot of parallels I saw to that. It was like Poltergeist with that African American 1950s setting to it as well.
Okay, I see all those parallels, but for me, it was the man in the black hat. But and I don't want which we don't want to
we
go,
need to get to that because
we
I don't want to
into it later because I do not want to spoil it.
Right,
but that character. His name is Christopher Heyerdahl. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. Heyerdahl. His character reminded me a lot of the character in Poltergeist 2, I think it was.
Yes, it was.
Which freaked me out as a child. I'm just going to say it.
Oh, it absolutely did.
Like, Poltergeist fucked me up.
Oh, no, it absolutely did. And the reason why...
Along with Cujo.
Poltergeist 2 and the character in that show was a preacher named Kane who brought his flock, if you will, to Southern California and then convinced them all to bury themselves alive, and then they died, and that was what drove the ghost. But I think specifically, Aisha, this is an interesting point. What scared so many people about Kane, that character, who's a creepy old man, looked like a skeleton, the actor who was playing him, an actor named Julian Beck, was dying of cancer when he played the role.
Oh, man.
He actually ended up dying 3 months after the movie was finished filming. In fact, I think it was right after it came out, he died. So he was already dying of cancer, like terminal cancer. And his look was of death.
Ugh.
And so I think, gosh, you know, for those of us like you and I who were children when that movie came out, that left an indelible mark. I mean, that character gave me nightmares after I saw that movie. And I was like 10, 11 years old, and that gave me nightmares. So,
yeah, if you were 10, 11, I was 9 or.
Yeah, 8 or 9.
Eight
so,
or nine,
and
that's
so it
not
left
cool.
a mark on a certain generation of us.
I can
who
only
saw that
imagine
movie.
Letting our 10-year-old see something like
oh
that right now.
Oh, my gosh. She would not sleep for a week if
crap
she saw that
pants.
Movie. Yeah, pretty
like,
much.
No. Okay, well, that's really interesting. I did not realize so many parallels to the movie, but yes. And I wonder if we ever got a chance to talk to the creator of this show, if that was a heavy, or if there's been anything said about that, if there was heavy inspiration drawn from that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the setting. And you had mentioned Compton.
Right.
So this takes place 1953 in Los Angeles, a neighborhood called Compton, which everybody knows is a black neighborhood today.
Right, today.
And I don't know when it became. Let's talk about when did it change. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so being
you're from LA.
Being from Los Angeles, born and raised, grew up there. I'll put my little local historian hat on for a second. So Compton, obviously, as I said earlier, is now synonymous with like the hip hop culture and black culture on the West Coast because a lot of musicians, a lot of artists came from that area. It is currently like 95%.
There are regular people that live there, not just people that go. That
I understand, hip-hop. But I'm saying it's gotten a lot of notoriety for that reason.
Because, yes.
And it is
because of Hollywood.
Exactly. And it's 90% black now.
Okay, yeah.
But Compton originally started out as a city of dairy farms in the 20s.
Wow.
And slowly grew up over time as LA grew. It grew, became a suburban city. Compton happens to be directly east of Watts, which was historically the center of the black community in Los Angeles, was
right.
Watts.
Right.
I think most everybody's probably heard of that. Compton is due east of Watts.
Okay.
So as African-Americans started moving in and they started getting good jobs and they wanted to start branching out and they wanted to start living in nicer neighborhoods, they started moving east from Watts and they moved slowly into West Compton, which was basically right next door. And in the late 40s, early 50s, they started moving into West Compton. That slowly started getting integrated. But East Compton, which is where the show takes place in 1953, stayed mostly white. All the way up through the late 60s,
wow.
when it finally started integrating, those people in East Compton pushed back very hard against black families moving in for a very long time. So it is absolutely authentic that because the show takes place in East Compton, and they're very clear to point that out in the show, that the first African-American, the first black family moving into that neighborhood on that street would have created quite the white outrage. I mean, for lack of a better term,
right.
white outrage at that time. So yeah, it's absolutely historically accurate.
I had no idea. I mean, when I saw that, I was like, wow, okay. Being from Texas, which you know, obviously, we don't know anything. We don't know much about California history here.
Right.
Tell you all about Texas history.
Right.
Oh, but,
I can tell you all about the California Gold Rush.
Right. I don't know about the California history, people. Sorry. I'll leave it to him to tell me. But that's very, very cool. Like to find out that was what it was back then and the shift to what it is today.
Yep.
Well, so we've talked about the basic plot. We talked about the characters.
Talked about the location.
Let's talk about your overall thoughts. So we're at the spot of whether you say you love it or you leave it.
Okay.
And why?
I guess I'm going to say love it is my verdict for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
Primarily because as an anthology series, I want to see where this goes. I don't want to give up on it at all. For anything that I might have felt was a shortcoming in season one, and there were a few things that come to mind. For the most part, I enjoyed it. The story was well-paced, well-written, very well-acted, historically accurate, painful to watch, which was, I think, one of the points. Painful to watch.
Which we'll talk. We can talk in depth a little bit.
We can talk. We will talk about that in depth later on. But all that said, it was worth watching that first season, and I want to see where they decide to go with it from here for season two and beyond. So while I did have some reservations and certain issues about some aspects of it, overall I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching it. I'm going to give it a love it.
It's so difficult when you have to just pick one or the other. I'm a Libra. It's very difficult for me to make decisions, folks.
I'm a Pisces. I can do this all day.
Can't do this. Because we're in this forum, I must make one. I will say love it because I did. It's hard to say that I enjoyed it because there were so many painful parts to it. Like we said, we'll talk a little bit more about those because I don't want to spoil it. And I'm not a big horror person, so it was very difficult for me to think before I even decided to watch the series, for me to even say yes to watching it because I shy away from anything that makes me scared.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure,
will
this scare me half to death or will I be able to handle it? You know, is it like, it's like The Walking Dead when I first started, we started watching it and you're like, come on, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. Back when it first aired, we didn't binge it after the fact. We watched it from the beginning and I was like, I don't think I can do zombies just because I was too freaked out over it. And then you end up loving it because it's about this plot of it's about characterization, the personal conflict people are having. It's not just about the zombies. It's about something much more. What, you know,
right.
I've given myself a little bit of like, just chill. You might be able to do this. So that's why I was able to go into this show. I did really love the acting. I really loved the characters and
agreed
the setting. And sometimes you've got to be uncomfortable. Sometimes you got to watch some stuff that makes you uncomfortable.
Especially if it's historically accurate.
Exactly. Exactly that. If it's historically accurate, sometimes you have to be uncomfortable. And I thought this was something I'm going to go ahead and just do. With that said, yes, I will give my love it so that it can be marked into the...
It should be forever ordained forever, as such.
Yes, whatever that...
So yeah. We've got two Lovitz and no Leavitts, so that's no good.
If there was a maybe category, I might have picked the best.
No, no, Libra, you got to make a decision one way or the other. Come on.
Depends
none
on
of that.
How you feel.
I know. What's the Libra's motto? It depends.
It depends. Anyway, so we got two Lovitz on this one. And at this point, we're wanting to go a little bit further into the highs and lows of the show.
Agreed.
What we really loved, what we really hated, more details. So if you have not seen the series and you don't want to be spoiled, go ahead and shut the podcast off at this point. And we thank you for joining us. Now, if you have seen the series and you want to get down and dirty about what we thought about some of the details, stay tuned because we are continuing this discussion.
Or if you haven't and you just want to be spoiled, that's fine too.
Ew.
That's you.
Who wants to be spoiled? You know what? There are people that do that.
The people who like to go and look at the end of the book. Yeah.
Who are you people? You're evil. You need to be like...
Helps. Oh, I should believe you all need...
You need Jesus.
You need Jesus, or a mental health professional.
You need a mental health. I don't understand those people, sorry. All right, so let's go into, the uncomfortable part of this show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And some of the highs and lows. You want to start with lows? You want to start with highs?
Well, I mean, there's lows. Yes, I will start with lows.
Okay, low.
Obviously, the biggest low is seeing...
The death of a child.
The death of a child, but not, and I don't want to, and I don't want to minimize that. You have to understand, it's seeing the death of a child being played out as part of racial terror, as part of racial harassment. Oof. And the horror of mistreatment of black folks by white folks in the South, anywhere really. I mean, but that specific incident occurred in North Carolina at their original house. Just knowing that things like that, and I'm presumably way worse things, have been perpetrated upon black people by white people throughout the history of this country is just something that is horrific to watch. Yeah. And full disclosure, I am white. Aisha is black. Mm-hmm. So we are interracial married couple.
It hits.
It's going to hit. It's for that reason, and because we grew up We have biracial children, but because we grew up differently, certain things hit in certain ways
to
each of us that may not hit in the way of the other. For me, it's a shame. I didn't do anything wrong, but it's a shame that people like me acted like that and felt that they had the right to do so. And
it was described somewhere that I read as white supremacist savagery.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
that is absolutely correct.
So beautifully put, because it's exactly what it is, savagery, depicted on film for us to see. Now, the question is, did it go too far, in your opinion? Like, do we need to see that? And does that go back to what I said about sometimes you have to be uncomfortable and see these things? Or do you really need to see them played out explicitly like it was in the show?
Well, you needed to, because the show revolved around the fact that Lucky was broken by what happened to her and her baby
Could
son.
Could we not just imply?
No, we couldn't, because part of what was implied was that she was crazy. There was times in the episodes where it was implied that she had actually harmed her child and that she made the story up about the racist who came and assaulted her and killed her child. There were people who believed that she had made it up, but in fact, she had hurt her child. And that was part of the artistic license of driving that plot point. You had to see this to see this is what really played out. It was necessary for the season to bridge that arc. Was it something I wanted to? Did it go too far in terms of seeing something that is hurtful and shameful and horrific? Probably, but I would counter that by saying I am sure way worse things have happened than that specific scenario to black people by white people.
I almost feel like, do you think we're at this point in our lives, we're in 2021, where black people are starting to give zero fucks about white feelings, white hurt? Like whatever issues you have, too bad. You're going to hear and you're going to see the horror, the pain, the suffering, the shit that we've endured all these years. And maybe that's okay. Or is it is it just for like shock value?
Well, I think there you could go either way with it. There's a shock value aspect to it, but there's also an aspect of wake up. This is what is happening to black folks. And I'm coming to this as a white person. I can only speak for myself, obviously, right. As a white person. I can't speak as to someone who went through these things. But I do believe that showing the kind of horrors that can happen when you allow these things to go unchecked, when you allow these behaviors to go unchecked, is important so that the next time you talk to somebody who might act as if they're supportive of these kind of behaviors, it's putting out there like, this is what happens. This is the end result when you allow these kind of behaviors to go unchecked.
Absolutely. No, I get it. I get it. I guess it's, you know, that was just a big, big low for me. I just didn't necessarily have to see it all. I mean,
and you don't like the horror aspect of it, of course, right, as well.
No, I okay. I know that there was another spot, even though we did not watch this show together, we did mention something, and you people who have seen the series, you might have felt the same way. Around episode 9,
well, the end of episode 8, yeah.
After eight. What were you telling me earlier? Because I felt the same way about.
So, what I was saying, I think it was at the end of episode 8. That's where Henry discovers Chester's remains in the box that Lucky had brought all the way from North Carolina. And he's beside himself because he sees it. He's like, why did you do this? Why did you dig him up? And she's like, I couldn't leave him there. The scene ended with them sitting on the lawn being surrounded by their neighbors and you weren't sure where it was going to go. And then they went into episode 9, which, as you know, gives you a background as to the supernatural, you know, hauntings, the supernatural drivers of what is terrorizing this family. That goes into that strictly from a historical aspect.
Right.
So then you get back to the beginning of episode 10, final episode of the season, and Lucky's in a sanatorium. She's in basically a mental health facility. And it's implied heavily that the cops came and arrested her and
right.
put her in
They had her committed.
Had her committed because they thought she had killed her child and then stuck the body in a box under the bed.
I literally had to go back and be like, did I miss something?
Right. I had to go back and wait a minute. Was there like 20 minutes I missed?
Yeah.
It wasn't a good edit. That's the thing that bothered me. It's like, okay, I understand they kind of implied it, a little bit of exposition to kind of give you, fill it in a little bit. But I felt like it was very jarring and it just kind of skipped. And it was like, it's like someone just cut out 20 minutes of the show and said, we don't have time for this. We're gonna strip it out. And I didn't like the way that flowed. That was the only aspect of the entire season that just didn't flow well.
True.
I was just gonna say the other low part was for me personally. If you watched episode 9, introduced you to the preacher Epps and his religious community and how they accepted in those African-American settlers who were coming through whose wagon broke down, and then how that all just deteriorated into this horrific scene at the end where the visitors were blinded and then burned and then cursed, and then their whole town caught aflame. Very much that was the parallel to Poltergeist 2 and Kane and that whole thing. That's what really drove it. Which
right, that was the preacher we were speaking of. The man preacher. In the black hat
right.
is what we were referring to. And obviously, if you're listening or you want to be spoiled, you've already seen the series. You heard us talk about that. He had the very much the same look, same right. black hat, same
tall, gaunt figure.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. At some point in the beginning, it's like you thought he was this man of God.
And he
you
probably
thought
was
that he was
in the beginning
loving and.
But you know what it was? It was that little boy he rescued was the devil. That Miles, because at the end, he was the one who said,
he was the one he shook with
on the covenant. So he was slowly corrupted by the devil. At least that's what I think they're heavily implying, if not outright stating.
Do you think that there was a Miles ever? Do you think anybody could see a Miles?
Because, you know, he found him on the side, he found him underneath a bush out in the middle of the desert. And it was like,
where
did this boy come from? Exactly. It was supposed to be the devil. At least that's how I interpret it.
Yeah,
I
like that.
You can, I guess others may interpret it differently. That's how I interpreted it.
Let's say evil.
Evil, sure. The embodiment of
evil.
Whatever you want to say. But I just feel like it was that thing about that episode. I get, obviously, that it was required to give us a background on the supernatural reasons why this family's being terrorized and what have you. And it was, I think it was well intentioned, but I think it was, I want to say it was a little over the top and absurd. The fact that they basically turned on the two black settlers that showed up that they were taking in as guests,
right.
Not terribly surprising given the social norms of, I don't know, what was that, late 1800s or whatever that probably was. But the fact that they then blinded them and strung them up, and then the whole town catches flame. It was a little bit like showy and sort of like, I guess there's some artistic license, yeah. but I felt a little absurd and over the top a little bit. But I guess they were trying to make a point that they were cursed. Yeah. They had been cursed. I don't know. It just felt a little out there and over the top to me personally. That was
town present-day Compton?
Basically. They're trying to imply because the very last scene, they show the town burnt, yes, yeah. and then they just scroll up. And then scroll back down, and you're on Palmer Lane. Yeah. So it's trying to imply that the basement of that church where Epps shook hands with the right. devil was literally
the basement of the house.
FYI, as a Southern Californian, we don't have basements. Because of earthquakes, you cannot have basements. Houses would collapse into them during an earthquake. So when they said there's a basement, I was like, what? I was like, wait a minute. There are no damn basements in Southern California. Oh, but I see now why they put it there. Now it all made the connection once I saw that episode. But I was like, what is this bullshit? When I first saw it, I was like, there are no damn basements in Southern California. Hello.
Side note, everybody. He's going to go off on basement.
Sorry. It bugged me. I'm OCD. It bugged the hell out of me. I was like, what is this?
Okay, moving on.
Moving on.
Were they Amish?
They were Dutch.
They were Dutch. Yeah, well, but would this be Amish then? Is Amish not Dutch? I'm sorry.
Well, Amish is Pennsylvania Dutch.
Okay.
You know, it's a good question.
That's what I thought that they could have been. Maybe they were.
Well, it's hard to tell because there was no technology back then anyway, so it was hard to tell whether they were Amish per se, but they're definitely related. Definitely because everybody's brother and sister, everybody's supposed to be equal. That is very much, I think, an Amish way of living.
We don't know much about it, so we don't.
But clearly it's a community that moved to California from somewhere east. And in fact, their accents were Dutch. And knowing some Dutch people, the accents were on point.
But if
so they were Dutch.
Right. But here's the deal. Brother Epps... Preach Epps, whatever you want to call
Brother Epps,
was not good. Because if the entire damn town was racist, like ready to kill these black settlers on a dime, like what would have made him any better? You know what I mean? So maybe he was bad from the beginning. He was, conditioned to think. Because they just said, they were like, well, they've done nothing, but black people have done nothing, but... torment and what did they say? They said basically cause problems around the world and
right.
I forgot the way that they played.
Yeah,
they put
I mean
it,
they made but, it a very biblical thing.
Yeah, and I was like, so none of these people are about being like Jesus.
Well, but the fact is Epps had an issue with pride. That was brought up. He, some of his cohorts in the town made note of the fact that he says he can talk to God. So they were a little bit sarcastic right. and a little bit contemptuous of that because everybody was supposed to be equal. And then, he sits there and he says pride is a sin. And then later on, he's like, no, pride in the name of the Lord is a good thing. So, but the devil was feeding him right. these and made him so prideful that he thought he was the shit, basically.
And I feel like... The more he lost his...
That was his downfall.
The more that the evil took his sight,
right.
the more evil he became.
Well, more evil became, the more he lost his sight, yes. which was a...
Or vice versa.
A right. symbolism for losing sight of God. Yes.
Ooh-wee.
Yep. What? That yeah. Right. Actually, now that we talk about it, actually, there's a lot of aspects of that episode I do like. I still think the final scene where the whole damn town went up in flames is a little absurd, a little over the top. Right. But overall, I do like the symbolism and I do like the explanation of how all that came to be.
Right. That's what I was going to say that. Like you said, you didn't quite like it, but I won't say I enjoyed any of it. I liked that episode because I did like that backstory. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay. Like it makes sense now. A lot of horror things you. See, there's no sense. It's just like some shit just happened and right. You're like, what? It makes no sense. You're supposed to just believe things was created out of air.
Right.
And somebody came and killed you and who knows who Jason is and who, or whatever. Right, I don't know. Right. Maybe there are explanations for all these things. I don't watch them. But I think it was good to see that how it all just began.
No, I agree.
And how it tied in. So.
I agree. No, it was good. It was good. I think that's it for me in terms of lows.
Okay.
I think the high points, we touched on them. Obviously, the acting.
Well, we talked about the phenomenal acting. Any specific characters that you want to focus in on their acting? I think if we're talking about some of the white characters too, we need to like touch on some of them as much as we wanted to hate them in this entire them.
Okay. Hold on. I am going to put one more low out there now that you mentioned that. Betty and that whole subplot on the dairy farm was absolutely ridiculously pointless to me. Okay. I mean, when I saw, okay, we know the guy.
His name's
Ryan Quanten. He played Jason Stackhouse on True Blood, but he played the George, the milkman.
George Bell.
Yeah. George Bell, the milkman on this show. Then he lived on a dairy farm somewhere out in the country, quote unquote. And she goes out there to visit him because they've been flirting for a while. And she wants him to basically, as he's a Korean War vet, he indicated that he was willing to do things other people might not. So she went out there with the hope of convincing him to like put the smack down on the Emerys.
Because her husband ain't going to do it.
Right. Because the husband, for various reasons of his own, wasn't going to step up and do anything.
He seemed to be the only decent white person in the entire show.
Pretty much.
Sort of.
Pretty much. I mean,
we'll give him a half.
I won't give anybody a pass on that.
No, I didn't say pass. I said half.
Okay. He wasn't as bad as the others.
A sliver.
But anyway, so she went to that dairy farm hoping that George might, you know, convince him to do something.
Right.
And what he ends up doing, of course, is basically he roofied her, and then he stuck her in a friggin' nuclear.
They don't have roofies back then.
Whatever, the equivalent in the 50s. And then he fucking stuck her in a nuclear bunker, locked her in there like some Cloverfield bullshit, and then basically was proceeding to act like, we're going to live out this beautiful, wonderful life, but you're going to stay locked in here for the rest of your natural life. And then, in the bunker. And then she finally stabs him in the neck with the stupid corkscrew, the wine opener. That didn't do anything because she missed the jugular vein. He gets all pissed off. He goes upstairs. He coaxes her out by leaving the place unlocked and then basically shoots and kills her as she tries to run away. I was like, I get it that there was a need to explain why Betty disappeared and then had to be an onus on the whole block thinking that the Emerys had something to do with this.
Right. So they had to like...
So she had to disappear for a reason, but the whole fucking thing was just ridiculous.
But it made sense. I mean... Well, okay.
I don't know. It didn't make sense, but it felt silly, especially the last part where she gets shot and killed at the end. By then, everything on Palmer Lane was exploding. Everything was blowing up. Like, killing her like that seems sort of like, what was the point?
I guess we needed some sort of closure on her. However, we did not get closure on the weird family relationship she has.
Oh, I don't even know if I want to go there. It's clearly obvious that there's some incestual sexual assault, sexual abuse type situation going on there that's heavily implied but never outright stated.
They didn't go into any of those. Like, you know, okay. That was a very heavily implied, but then.
Yeah, and I don't think.
Left alone.
And I think it's for the best that that was left as it was. Because
introducing it. Why?
Well, to show that she.
She's fucked up?
Well, basically.
Possibly? That's
well, it definitely shows that as a character, she's fucked up because of her childhood experiences. But what it also did was drove the fact that she went to her parents first for a loan in order to be able to sell the house they live in and go move somewhere else. And when the parents didn't do that because she wouldn't kowtow to whatever nastiness was potentially going to ensue in her parents' house, you know, she then ran to George and be like, well, I can't take care of this the civilized way, so I'm going to take care of this the uncivilized way. So I guess it drove that plot forward. But again, I mean, and it obviously shows that she was a very broken woman in so many ways. And, you know, whereas she was the envy of all the wives on the block, and it turns out she was the most broken and fucked up of all of them.
Right.
And it's all relative, and I guess it does draw a point about, you know, even among those you think are the best of us, you wouldn't want their problems, you know.
Right,
you think
exactly.
Your problems are bad, go take someone else's problems, you'd want your own back. But still, so there's little aspects to it like that were sort of like, I guess they did help, they were there for a reason, but some of it felt like superfluous to me.
Last low. All right, so with the highs of the phenomenal acting, and I was going to say shout out to Ryan Kwan, that he was creepy as fuck. I mean, to me, like, he did a great job.
Yeah.
And like you said, I always think of Jason Stackhouse from True Blood. So like, I was like, where oh, it just came to me. I was like, that's right. Who it is.
Yeah. No, I recognized him right away. Well, and honestly, going back to what I was just saying, Alison Pill, the actress who played Betty, she's phenomenal. I've seen her in a few things over the years.
It was very uncomfortable, her
facial expressions, you can tell is a woman who's about to crack.
Yes.
Like, she has perfected this. I mean, the tear in her wallpaper was a great symbolism for how woman has crafted this perfect plastic life, and the minute it starts to crack and break, and obviously she did that as a coping mechanism for whatever horror she grew up with.
Right.
But that she crafted that, and when it first started to crack and break, she immediately started to fall apart. And you just see how her character deteriorates as a human being over the course of the season. And I mean, the Emerys moving in precipitated it, but then it just kind of went and took its own journey. And it was just kind of just to see her face and see where she was going with it, and trying to put that fake plastic smile on her face while her whole life is crumbling around her.
She perfected that fake smile.
It was fun to watch. Yeah. Honestly, so I kudos to her. Obviously, the acting across the board.
Kudos to the kids.
Yes.
Chakotay, Wright, Joseph, Melody, Hurd. Those two, you know, obviously our main two characters, Lucky and Henry, Deborah and Ashley. The whole cast, I mean, really.
Absolutely incredible.
The tap dance man, as uncomfortable as that
very
was.
Very uncomfortable.
That was incredible acting.
Yeah, some of the scenes with the tap dance, I got to say, as much as it's obviously meant to be an offensive stereotype of, you know, blackface and that whole what was once considered comedic genre back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, which obviously is extremely offensive and always was offensive even today, but what that character represented and his interactions with Henry at the diner in the movie theater balcony,
that was deep, to me,
among the most moving and deepest scenes and difficult to watch of all the scenes, but yet they were the most fascinating, and I can only speak for myself, just the most fascinating and deep and absolutely just riveting scenes to watch in the entire season.
Every person had manifested what was their greatest fear, right?
Or the thing that could break them the easiest.
To break them the easiest. So for Ruby Lee, it was the blonde girl named Sophia or Sophia.
Yeah, she wanted to. She would rather. She wanted to be white. She didn't want to be.
Name? I can't remember. Her name. No, it wasn't. So that was her. That was the actress's name.
Yeah, I don't remember the character's name.
The cheerleader, the blonde Doris? Doris. That's Doris, it. Doris.
Yeah.
And for Gracie, it was
Miss Vera.
Mrs. Vera.
Miss Vera.
Miss Vera. And for Henry, the tap dance man,
right.
For Lucky,
it was the baby, and then the preacher showed up to Lucky, which is what drove her to be the protagonist of the show. It obviously, she was the strength. She was the one that saved the entire family
when
Epps came, you know, this close, and I'm doing my fingers real close together, this close to destroying them all. And she was the one that literally in the last episode came and saved them one by one by one.
Yep.
And she saved them, and then she saved herself. Then she committed him to hell, or at least that's how I'm going to read it.
Yep.
And so she was.
I did appreciate that. Would be the ultimate high for me. I appreciate the way that it all wrapped up.
It did. I do feel like they did a Hitchcockian ending where they're just staying there on the porch with the fire burning and the cops pointing guns at them, and you're like, oh, gee, what's going to happen next? This does not bode well. And then all you see is them staring everybody down, mean mugging, and then it ends. And so, I mean, you know, they may pick it up with this same cast. They may not. I don't know. We may never know what happened to the Emerys.
But if it's an anthology, wouldn't it be a different cast?
That's what I'm saying. We may never know what happens with the Emerys.
Yeah, I think
we're not meant to know.
No.
But it was just.
You can only just imagine that they still went through hell because it was 1953.
Right. And I just hate Hitchcockian endings. I'm sorry. I like closure.
But you know what? It makes sense, though. Why? You're not going to wrap it up in a bow.
You're absolutely
right. But
people
were still going to be treated like dogs.
Right. And life didn't get wrapped up in a bow.
It did not get better.
No. It probably got worse.
Right. Right.
It probably got worse.
Better for them.
I mean, they may look at it like what they just literally went to hell and back. Nothing could be worse than that. But the fact of the matter is, whatever is going to happen next to them probably got pretty bad.
Yeah. Which is very, very.
We should assume based on the fact that it's 1953.
Man, I don't know. There's
it was emotionally riveting at times, though. It definitely wore me out watching it. I'm not gonna lie.
I won't lie. I had to take a break in between. it probably took me a little bit longer to watch it than you, because I took a full like week break in between my viewings of it. I think I got to about 7 or 8 and then I had to take a break for the last 3. But I mean, all in all, like I said, we both rated a love it.
Yes.
I think it's a worthwhile view, worthwhile watch.
It's a worthwhile watch. It is a well executed
yes
show that sheds a light on the darkness of some of the racial horrors that have happened in the 20th century, mm-hmm. that have happened in the Jim Crow era. And, you know, the Lovecraft Country, which we podcasted on last year, also took place in roughly the same time frame, mid-50s, different parts of the country, but also shined a light on, you know, the racial horrors that were happening, which led to the burgeoning civil rights movement of, you know, starting the late 50s into the 60s, and really shines a light on experiences and historical events and acts of cruelty that people would rather just sweep under the rug and say, oh, we don't act like that anymore. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We don't do that anymore. We're not like that anymore. Racism is dead. You know, when you hear stuff like that, and you're like, no, it's not.
Oh, no.
No, it's not. No. It's if you allow people to think that, and if you allow them to believe
people
that.
People say that today.
And that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. They're saying it today. And I think it's a good
today,
it's good that shows like this come out and say, no, it's not. No, it's not, because look, this is what happened 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 70 years ago, still happening today.
People think it's because just, it was back
it's
then.
It's just gone in the closet is what it's done.
Yeah.
Except sometimes it comes out of the closet and it happens in full view,
yeah.
And yet we still sit there and say, oh, let's sweep it back into the closet. Not you and I, but people. It's more comfortable for the people who don't want to be offended, right. and that's the people who need to be offended.
Exactly. Maybe somebody.
And
maybe
that's one of the reasons I love the show.
All right. There we go.
Boom.
Well, I am so happy that we could present this to you guys. And
yes.
Hopefully you're interested enough that you want to go watch this. And if you have watched it, let us know what you think. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Pod Clubhouse. I guess that's about it for us on them.
Yes.
For Amazon Prime. So thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
And thanks so much, everybody.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.